Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Faisal, lots of questions about what's happening in fixed income and bonds, and that's the conservative piece of people's portfolios. But we have seen inflation expectations to begin the year, and then this conflict between the war between Russia and Ukraine sort of exacerbate those problems. The bond markets have been pretty volatile for bond markets, and what can we expect going forward?
There's two groups out there. One that are really concerned about what's happened to the bond market, and there's a bunch of investors out there, more individual investors, are saying just avoid bonds as a whole.
Yeah.
There's no need to be there. Let's go somewhere else. Cash, stocks, real estate, bonds are useless.
Right.
Let's address both of those concerns, because the bond market, like you've said many times, the stock market can take down a company. The bond market, and we're not joking here, can take down a country.
Right.
We're seeing it happen day by day through this crisis. So let's get to an expert who knows more about this than you and I do, who can actually get into more of the details of the impacts of Ukraine, the bond market, and inflation. Let's bring him on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Brian DeCosta is joining us, founding partner and president of Algonquin Capital. First of all, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about, really interested to get your impression around the uncertainties that have been created by this Russian war in the Ukraine and its impacts on inflation and your expectation around interest rates, and we'll get to the Bank of Canada in a minute, but just give us that sort of that framework of what you're thinking about right now.
So I think the there's going to be a short run and a long run impact from the Russian invasion in Ukraine. So the immediate impact is what we're seeing today, which is a high degree of uncertainty, largely driven by the sanctions. So we're going to have intended and unintended consequences of sanctions. And one of the consequences we can see is the price of oil, which is driving up inflation, you know, near-term inflation, and also actually going to be the price of food, given how much agriculture product comes out of the Ukraine and Russia. So in the near term, we're already feeling the pain at the pump, and we're feeling it at the grocery store, and there's going to be no relief. But I think the bigger picture is actually more important. Which is before, especially once the wall fell, we had a peace dividend, which allowed companies to put supply chains around the world, searching out the lowest cost. Now, what I think is re-emerged as a factor is national security. And so that's going to affect industries like energy, transportation, think of technology, telecommunications, pharmaceuticals, food. And what that means is you're no longer, lowest cost is no longer going to be the winner. So I expect to see onshoring of production back into the Western world where, you know, costs will be higher. The other implication from this is if you're a company that relies solely on production from a country that has an authoritarian regime, you're going to rethink that, because you're going to see how fast you could be out of business if that regime decides to launch an invasion of sorts. And think of Taiwan and China. And so again, you're going to see some of those companies diversify that supply chain. So what does that mean? Before the pandemic, inflation was 1.8% in Canada for about 10 years. And I think what worries me now is I'm putting a non-trivial chance, so for me that's around 30%, that inflation is actually going to run much hotter. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see inflation of 3%. And in that world, that means interest rates are going to be 3, 4, 5%.
So with those in line, the Bank of Canada is at a headline, at a spot right now with all the conflict. The numbers on price of food, the inflation or the cost increase on oil and gasoline, many are saying this is temporary. And Brian, when we start to see that this being temporary, why in the heck would the Bank of Canada need to raise interest rates to cool it down if this is a temporary issue? Is there other parts of the economy that needs rising interest rates? And then how do you actually price that out to see if there's opportunity to make money in the bond market with rising interest rates?
So let me first start with the Bank of Canada. So the bank has one mandate, and that's to foster the conditions to keep inflation in a band of 1 to 3%. And the reason for that is because they believe that if they can provide an environment of low and stable inflation, it's easy for businesses and people to make decisions on borrowing, right? Because they expect, you know, they have an expectation of interest rates. And that allows good economic growth, which provides the most most benefit for the most people. Even before the invasion of Russia, or the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we had inflation of 5.1%. Today, we saw the on Friday, we saw the unemployment numbers in Canada, and we see an unemployment rate of 5.5%. So basically, even without the invasion, you had the emergency rate setting of, you know, now it's 0.5% is just simply not warranted. In fact, if you can make the argument before the pandemic, the rate was 1.75%, that's probably a more reasonable level to be at. And so the bank had already started raising rates, and I think they will continue to do so. They know it's not going to affect the price of gasoline or food, but at the same time, what they're trying to do is to say, well, we have to make sure that we redirect some consumption dollars away from goods and services, which would be the real concern in terms of price pressures spreading and inflation becoming embedded in the psychology of Canadians. So on that basis, I expect them to keep raising rates into the summer. You know, I think once the rate is 1 or 1.25%, they're probably going to pause, because by then the intended and unintended consequences of the sanctions will be much more evident. And also they have to assess the impact on higher interest rates on highly indebted Canadians. So they are going to be prudent, but this is why that they're raising rates, is because at the end of the day, their concern is largely driven by that inflation and the risk that it becomes embedded in psychology.
How do you make money in these types of markets when interest rates are rising? Because the conversation of some investors, primarily retail, is stay the heck away from bonds. You're not going to make money in a rising interest rate market. Go somewhere else.
Right. And, you know, and I think further to that, it's been pretty disappointing returns in fixed income over the last decade as well. You know, I think between either GICs or bond markets, investors are earning like 2%, which once you factor in taxes and inflation, is you can make the arguments dead money. And I think that's why a lot of investors have just said, you know, don't bother with bonds. So again, I'm going to give you the good news, the short run and the long run story. The next 12 months is a headwind for bond markets, in particular for long maturity bonds, which are very sensitive to rising interest rates. However, I think there's a bit of good news here. Interest rates are going higher. So if you're invested in shorter maturity bonds, you're going to have those bonds maturing back at par. You're going to have coupons received. So you're going to be reinvesting at higher rates. And so what I think we're going to be in a world of 3% type of interest rates, maybe 4%, then fixed income starts to become a much more attractive asset class. And that's for that reason, in our funds, we're keeping our maturity profile quite low, because we know that, you know, there's a headwind that we're facing today. But when I look out 12 months from now, I see a much better horizon for fixed income, and where it can fit into people's portfolios much more comfortably.
What do you tell an investor today, Brian, that says bonds have no place? Or do bonds still have a place in the portfolio today, given what you've just said?
I think they do. You know, bonds at the end of the day are your high quality assets. You know, if for example, if you look at the corporate bond market in Canada, and I could give you a number of examples, but let's pick Suncor, because I think many of the client base out there would understand that name. So you can, we know that the Western Canada, or Canada as a whole, stands to benefit from sanctions on Russian oil, in that there's going to be a demand for Canadian oil is going to remain robust, and we can see that in oil prices. So a company like Suncor, which has been focused on reducing debt, you've seen a bounce in the stock price. But you could invest in Suncor bonds now where the yield is almost 4%. There's almost no, you know, there's a very low risk that Suncor is not going to pay that interest payment, not going to pay you back. In fact, they're paying down debt. So those bonds are becoming much more valuable. And, you know, if you're at all worried around the risk of some really big stock market correction, at least your capital in a bond is not as exposed as much. So I think bonds still play a role. They're kind of the ballast in a portfolio. They'll provide a little bit of income because, you know, as we know, it's fun to be 100% in equities when they're going up. But I'm sure if you were 100% in equities in March of 2020, you probably had a number of sleepless nights. And that's what bonds do. They allow you to have a better night's sleep at the end of the day.
Brian, thank you very much for your input today on fixed income, Bank of Canada profile, what we can expect over the next 12 to call it 24 months. We appreciate your time today.
Great. No, thank you, everyone. And everyone have a great day.
Terrific. Been joined by Brian DeCosta. He's a founding partner and president of Algonquin Capital. And, you know, we talk about the use of bonds, not just in the growth bucket, but also in the income bucket to provide stability and predictability, right? Access to cash flow. Not, you don't get high volatility where, you know, if the market drops, you have to draw from a beat up market. All of those things become important building blocks to bulletproofing your retirement.
And we're going to talk about that at our upcoming seminar on Tuesday, April 26, 7 p.m. live online. You need to register for this. So go to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Are you worried about how inflation is going to impact your retirement? Well, we're going to discuss the impacts of that on your retirement after the break. So join us here on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.